A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. And I do believe we have some infringements taking place around the country right now when it comes to our right to keep and bear arms. We're going to talk with Jason Rance of KTTH in Seattle, Washington, here in just a couple of minutes about a proposed measure in Bellingham, Washington, that on paper anyway, would have authorized the mayor to suspend not only gun sales in the city, but to ban the possession of firearms as well. Now, the city council backtracking there. We'll give you all the details coming up in just a minute, but we do have some other headlines to get to, including news out of Los Angeles, where the county sheriff there now says that gun stores must close. He is adding 1,300 deputies to the patrol. They've released about 750 nonviolent inmates from the county lockup. But let's focus on that gun store closure, if we can, for just a moment. Governor Gavin Newsom in California is basically leaving up to the counties to decide whether or not gun stores are going to remain open as essential businesses or whether or not they will close. Now, I happen to think if you look at the long lines of gun owners outside of gun stores in L.A. County, going back a week or more now, that's a pretty good sign that a lot of Los Angelinos consider the right to keep and bear arms critically essential at this point in time. But the sheriff there, Sheriff Villanueva, says, and said a couple days ago, he said he was concerned about people buying guns. And now he's apparently using his authority to tell gun stores to close down. Huh, I know. Meanwhile, you've got gun stores around the country who are also faced with these, you know, shelter-in-place orders or stay-at-home orders that are trying to do whatever they can to keep a revenue source coming in, as well as to help ensure that people who want to be able to protect themselves and their families during this state of emergency can do so. In New Jersey, you have a gun store owner who has decided, you know what, we're going to do something a little bit different here. We're going to actually offer ammo for delivery. Yes, across the entire state, by the way. Derek Patera is the owner of SC Arms in Spotswood, New Jersey. I spoke with Derek yesterday. He said, you know, look, the governor in New Jersey shut down gun stores. We can't do background checks. We can't sell firearms. But what we can do is we can sell ammunition. And he said, I have a steady supply coming in right now. You know, quantities are limited, but I'm getting restocked as best as the industry will allow. And as long as we are getting ammo in, we will be selling ammo to anybody who possesses a valid firearms identification card in New Jersey. And they will deliver to your door. They will practice safe social distancing measures to ensure that there's, you know, 6 feet of distance between you and the store employee. But they're driving, again, across the state of New Jersey right now to deliver ammunition to those who want it and those who need it. And I think that is fantastic. I suspect we'll see more of that around the country, but we won't see that in California because of California's idiotic ammunition background check laws, which before the coronavirus pandemic even began was already causing problems because of the false denials. There were tens of thousands of California gun owners who were being told, sorry, your information doesn't match what's in our state database, so you can't purchase ammunition. That was already happening. And now it's just going to be exponentially worse in the state of California because of the additional false denials. And by the way, Cal DOJ could decide that they're not going to run background checks on ammunition sales anymore. Now, they haven't taken that step yet, but they could. And what happens then in the state of California? I tell you what, these are extraordinary times. For the most part, we are seeing governors recognize the critical nature of our right to keep and bear arms at this point in time, but that is sadly not the case everywhere, which brings us to Bellingham, Washington, where city council introducing a measure that on paper anyway, again, would have authorized the mayor not only to suspend the sale and transfer of firearms, but would have suspended the ability to legally possess a firearm. Jason Rance from KTTH in Seattle broke the story. He joined me this morning to talk about the latest developments there in Bellingham, Washington, as well as the greater Seattle area. Take a look and a listen. Jason, thanks so much for coming back on the program, sir. It's great talking with you today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, more news from one of the hotspots right now for the coronavirus in the Seattle area. You reported that the city council in Bellingham, Washington, is set to consider Monday evening an emergency declaration that would have allowed, at least on paper anyway, the mayor of Bellingham to not only suspend gun sales, but to actually make it illegal to possess a firearm during the state of emergency. I know that you were busy on Monday getting the word out about this and letting folks know what actually happened with this ordinance Monday night, or this proposed ordinance Monday night.
So essentially, the mayor and the council walked back any of the concerns over the potential ban of guns. They said, actually, what we're doing here is working on a very old piece of legislation that we moved with a procedural vote just so we can end up utilizing some of the aspects of this bill. So they said they have no intention of actually banning weapons. They're saying, and I spoke to a council member yesterday on my show, Council Member Michael Lilliquist, saying this is just a bill that was written in the 70s, and we just haven't removed the anti-gun language yet. He indicated to me that he was looking into ways to get this language taken out of the bill because they said they have no intention of actually utilizing any of the anti-gun language. They said that they didn't actually see the legislation that was posted online before they were taking this vote, which they said is part of the reason why so many people got freaked out by it. They seem to understand why people got freaked out by it.
Okay.
So they spent the last day sort of doing some damage control as to what the actual intent of their move was.
Okay. It's interesting. We have seen this around the country where I think in Champaign, Illinois, we had a similar measure. And again, the language of that emergency ordinance dated back to the 1960s. We've seen this, I believe, in New Orleans as well. It is kind of interesting, just as a history lesson, to realize how many jurisdictions had put in place back in the 1960s and early 70s when you had regular riots, that would take place every summer. How many of these places said, all right, if need be, we're going to step in and curtail people's ability to own a firearm. And in many ways, I guess, Jason, it shows how far we have come in the decades since, because, after the seizures of firearms in Louisiana during Hurricane Katrina, the NRA go around the country, I think in nearly 24 states, maybe a little bit more than 24 states, there are now emergency powers protection laws that actually prohibit governors from allowing these types of things to happen. So we are, I think, in better shape than we were, let's say, a decade and a half ago. But what is the applicable Washington law? Sounds like this is hopeful news out of Bellingham that they're going to change the language there. But what about other communities? And what does state law in Washington State actually say about the authority of the governor or of these local officials to infringe on people's Second Amendment rights during a state of emergency?
Yeah, it is kind of interesting because we can look at a world pre-coronavirus and we still had individual cities within the state of Washington try to push specific anti-gun measures. But we have a preemption law in the state of Washington, which essentially says individual cities, individual jurisdictions cannot pass gun legislation. Now, cities like Seattle decided to move forward with gun legislation anyway and try to challenge this in court. We've got a couple cases now, I think, that are still going through the courts here in Washington State that have yet to be decided by the Supreme Court here as to whether or not cities can implement, for example, taxes. That is clearly meant to put a burden on gun owners. So, regardless of what's happening in Bellingham, we still have cities sort of trying to push the limits. I think once you look at a public health emergency, as you know, it's not just a Washington issue. It's all across the country. We generally grant pretty specifically broad powers to governors and to mayors. Now, does that equal them being able to take away some basic civil rights? No. Does it mean sometimes people might not try to do it? No. I'm waiting for Bellingham to actually get this language out of their bill, and I think they should have done a better job in at least explaining away what the intent was early on, because as I talked to this council member, I mean, he basically agreed that, yeah, it's very easy to read that and say, oh, yeah, they're trying to take away guns.
Well, absolutely, which only, you know, adds to the fear and concern of a lot of Americans right now who are, you know, they're right now they're worried about the coronavirus. They're worried about their job. They're worried about their families. And then to see this language that says, well, maybe now you need to be worried about your constitutional rights being stripped from you, too. That does add to the unnecessarily to the confusion and to the fear that a lot of people are feeling at the moment.
100%. You know, look, when we're going through a public health crisis, people tend to hunker down in ways that are effective in this case, not spreading the virus, but also because of their fears, they end up hoarding materials. They end up feeling like their personal safety is at risk in a way that, you know, probably isn't. I don't necessarily think anyone should be going down and buying a bunch of ammo right now out of fears, but I get the concern from folks, and, you know, that's just how it goes. I think Bellingham did a really poor job in handling what would happen if people actually read the stuff that they were putting out there, right? And I think that's kind of weird because the assumption is, and for the most part, I think it's a valid assumption, people generally don't read this stuff, but when they do, and you've got language in there that is of particular concern, of course it's going to spread in 2020.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think that you're right in terms of, you know, listen, I don't go hoarding ammo, save some for the rest of us, first of all. But, you know, I don't think it's an unreasonable concern for people to be want to be prepared in case, you know, critical services get shut down. The unthinkable 2 weeks ago is our reality today. So what's unthinkable today could be our reality 2 weeks from now. But again, that's no reason to panic. As you say, though, you know, governments at all levels need to do their job as best as they can right now. And not looking this language over before you just insert it, I think was a mistake. I hope that it's something that is rectified here. Now, I do want to ask you, Governor Inslee yesterday put in place a stay in shelter order for non-essential businesses. I just perused the list of businesses that are considered essential. Didn't see gun stores listed there. Didn't see, on the other hand, didn't see an order, you know, demanding that gun stores close. Is this a gray area in Washington State at the moment under the governor's order?
We're going to find out because last night when the governor made that announcement, in his speech at least, he didn't actually offer any specifics beyond healthcare, beyond transportation, some of the businesses that we already knew were essential. Mm-hmm. And then they put out this list that you're referencing, and it's a very, very long list, but there does seem to be some gray area. Now, does it specifically end up impacting gun stores? We're going to know in the next day or so because the governor's office is going to provide more guidance as to what that is. The actual stay-at-home order doesn't go into effect until tomorrow. It goes into effect right now just from a personal standpoint, but from a business standpoint, we were given 48 hours, and I think that issue is still going to be discussed. I was asking some lawmakers yesterday on my show live after this announcement came down, and there was still some considerable confusion on that. So hopefully we'll have some guidance. I don't know what they'll end up doing on the gun side. I can tell you this, you know, to go in and get a concealed pistol carry license, you can't do that right now in King County because they closed it down, because to do that, you have to go into the public office. And so they've cut off public in-person services. And that was one of the issues that ended up getting sort of pushed aside as of right now over concern of the coronavirus. I don't think that it was intended to stop people from getting concealed pistol permits.
Yeah.
But that's what the end effect is. I don't think there was any nefarious intent there. But the intent is the effect now is cutting off someone's rights.
Absolutely. And again, we've seen this from sheriff's offices around the country. And I think that you're right. I don't think this is an intent to stop people from being able to exercise their right. But again, you talk about those, you know, first responders, and we're talking about, you know, the public. And I imagine right now, you know, a crush of folks who would like to get their concealed carry license going into the sheriff's office, possibly exposing workers and deputies to the coronavirus. And then all of a sudden, you know, as we've seen in Detroit, you had 5 officers test positive, but 150 are under quarantine. You know, what happens if 20% of the King County Sheriff's offices all of a sudden now unavailable to report for duty, right? That's a genuine concern. I have seen some counties around the country move to like appointment only systems where, you know, mm-hmm. if you want your concealed carry license, you make an appointment, they clean the office between every appointment. They'll actually meet you outside and they'll try to do as much as they can, outside of the office itself. Some counties are doing a better job than others of adjusting to this. And I think other counties are simply saying, well, you know, we're going to do the easiest thing, which is shut down these offices for a few weeks. What is what's the open carry law in Washington State? Do you know, Jason?
You're allowed to open carry here. It's not really utilized all that often, at least in the Seattle area where it's more densely populated. We don't have the same gun ownership statistics that you would have outside of Seattle. Remember, you can't even purchase a weapon in Seattle because there's no gun shops anymore because they ran out because of the taxes that were imposed on them. So for the most part, you're generally not seeing open carry outside of protests that are done on behalf of gun rights.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is perfectly legal here.
Okay. And that might be an option for folks going forward. Also, you know, keep in mind, as you have a stay-at-home order, a lot of folks are going to be staying at home. So perhaps for those individuals, the ability to carry concealed is not going to be as big of an issue as it would have been, a month or two ago. But we are still going to have people going out to get groceries. We are still going to have people, those critical mm-hmm. and essential employees, they're going to be going to work as long as they possibly can. So, this is, I think, going to be an issue going forward. And hopefully, again, we do get some clarity from the governor. Every state, Jason, right now that has said gun stores have to close has a Democrat governor. But not every Democrat governor has ordered gun stores to close. You've had the governor of Illinois, mm-hmm. governor of Connecticut, governor of Kentucky that have specifically said, look, gun stores are going to remain open. They are essential businesses. So this is not the typical red-blue divide that we might see on the gun issue, right? I mean, we're seeing, I don't want to say some strange bedfellows, but it's not simply that, okay, well, if I've got a Democrat governor, they're going to shut down gun stores. We're not seeing that.
Yeah, totally. I do think that, again, the context with the coronavirus is there's going to be certain hotspots where you are going to have to take more extreme measures to get it under control. And so if you live in, say, Idaho, West Virginia, or Rhode Island, it's not being treated the same as if you live in New York, California, or Washington. Seattle versus Boise is a lot different than, New York City and Charlotte. So, again, right now, I believe King County is the only county that's not doing the concealed carry permits because of the unique situation of the spread of the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And we've got a staffing issue with the King County Sheriff's Office, just like SPD, where if you have even a small outbreak, you're crippling these departments. And so I understand why they would want to take that seriously. Plus, the sheriff of King County is on the show all the time. She is not an anti-gun nut. So I do think that this is just a unique situation, and that's why you've got some governors taking positions or mayors taking positions that they otherwise wouldn't. And they're trying to be I give some leeway and deference to some people in a crisis like this. I don't think anyone can respond perfectly. I think they can do their best. And unless there's some very clear nefarious intent, I think we can err on the side of them not trying to take away rights at this point.
I think that's a fair statement.
Let me just ask you, be aware.
Yeah. And look, unfortunately, I mean, there are going to be some that try to politicize this to use their anti-gun agenda. But what I have seen just in my report over the past couple of weeks is that for the most part, we've actually seen, a lot of politicians, including some pretty unexpected ones, listen to the voices of gun owners, listen to the voices of gun store owners, firearms retailers. The National Shooting Sports Foundation has done a good job of reaching out to various states and saying, look, this is critical. These businesses are critical. They need to be allowed to remain open. And again, it hasn't been 100% successful, but I think right now, for the most part, we have seen this desire to err on the side of our rights at this point. Now, just real quick, I want to ask you, how are things right now in Seattle? It seems to me that we've seen some reporting over the past couple of days that perhaps we're starting to see a leveling off of new cases in the Seattle area?
We believe that we're going to see in the short term a flattening of the curve, but we also don't think we're going to see the end of it. So there, I was on Fox News last night, and there was a UW doctor on right before me, and he made the point that we're expecting to see sort of a spike in the next 2 weeks. And after that spike, we'll have a better sense as to whether or not the curve is flattening, just because we didn't have the best testing mechanisms in place up until recently. So we're a little, even though we started 2 weeks behind, say, New York, our testing capabilities were not set up the same way currently New York is set up. So we'll have a better sense of that in about 2 weeks. I think the reason why we're doing the stay-at-home order for the next 2 weeks, or at least 2 weeks, is because they're expecting that spike to come soon, and they want to make it easier to flatten the curve after that comes. So again, we'll see. I think there's a general belief that things are getting a little bit under control, but not enough people were abiding by the guidance to stay at home. We had the sun come out at a time where the sun doesn't usually come out, and so everybody flocked to parks and beaches, and they decided to not socially distance themselves at all. Mm-hmm. And you've got a lot of younger people who are taking the position, oh, it's not that big of a deal, it's just a virus. You can't isolate yourselves, you got to move on with your life. It's just like, oh my gosh, these people are so dumb, and they're forcing the hands of the governor in this case.
Yeah, you know, and we're seeing this too. I was talking to a friend who lives in a pretty big southern city, and just talking about, you know, between St. Patrick's Day, between, you know, the Mardi Gras celebrations, and the, you know, just the spring break, that, you know, a lot of these cities saw over the past few weeks, just bam, 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 three, you know, pretty big days or occasions to celebrate and congregate and gather together. And, you know, we don't, I don't think we've seen the full impact of the lack of social distancing in a lot of these places yet because of the incubation period of the disease.
I will say this, you know, for the most part, the ones we're seeing who are disobeying this are young people, right? So they're Gen Y, Gen Z, and millennials. And I noted the irony the other day of this is the same group that tells us, misusing data on purpose, that the world is going to cease to exist because of global climate change within 10 years. And we have to act now. And yet the sun comes out and they go outside and completely ignore all the guidance on an immediate public health concern. It's just very ironic.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, irony abounds these days, unfortunately. Jason, yeah. Listen, man, thank you so much for coming on the program. Thank you for everything that you're doing, keeping folks informed there in Seattle. If we've got any Seattle area listeners, I'm sure they already know how to find you. But, hey, you know, you're online as well. How can folks listen to your show?
Yeah, you can go into wherever you download your podcast. Just search Jason Rantz Show and you'll be able to connect and find me on Twitter, Jason Rantz.
All right, Jason, thanks so much, man. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You bet. Jason Rantz joining us from KTTH in Seattle, Washington, here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Appreciate Jason joining us on the program. By the way, if you want to chime in and let us know what's going on in your neck of the woods, we would love to hear from you. Are gun stores open? Are they packed? Are they closed? Have you not left your house in a week? Email address, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter as well, @CamEdwards. Feel free, share your stories. We're going to try to be an open line of communication all across the nation here while this pandemic sweeps across the United States. And, you know, normally we do our armed citizen story, we do our recidivist report, we do our good deed of the day. Right now, it's so many court systems are closed. It's very difficult to come up with our recidivist reports. But the good news is we do still have Americans who are protecting and defending themselves across the country right now. This story, today's armed citizen story from Indianapolis, Indiana, where Channel 6 reports a homeowner shot and critically injured an intruder in the overnight hours. Great to see this. Again, it looks like the homeowner not hurt. According to the Indy Channel, Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department officers called to the home around 3 o'clock in the morning for a report of a person who had been shot. When they arrived, they located a man suffering from at least one gunshot wound. He was taken to Eskenazi Hospital in critical condition. Detectives at the scene say two people were inside the home when they heard someone trying to break in through the rear entrance. Homeowner opened fire, striking the suspected intruder at least once. The incident does remain under investigation, but at this point in time, looks like a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. And by the way, for any would-be criminals, now that we have a huge pool of would-be criminals that might watch this program, but just a little bit of advice here. This is not the time that you really want to spend, a great deal of time in the hospital recovering from your injuries after trying to break into a home, nor is it a great time to be spending in jail at the moment. So, probably something better you could do than break into somebody's home and possibly pay for it with your life, certainly pay for it with the loss of your freedom. Stay at home, play Scattergories instead, do something like that. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program today. One reminder or one bit of information, the National Shooting Sports Foundation has put out a database of the various emergency orders that we've seen around the country and what the applicable state laws are regarding gun stores and firearms retailers. You can find that at nssf.org. It's a great resource. I appreciate you checking it out. We will have more of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation coming up tomorrow. But in the meantime, you can stay informed and up to date at bearingarms.com. You can also become a VIP member of bearingarms.com and support our Second Amendment journalism during this critical time. We do thank you for your support. You can also find us at Town Hall Media on YouTube, also Bearing Arms Cam and Company at Apple Podcasts. That way you never have to miss a moment. Be safe, be well. We'll talk to you soon with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company tomorrow.